Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Wednesday, the 13th of November. Coming up today, we'll hear about a petition that's been launched by a grieving mum to stop people walking their dogs through a cemetery near Folkestone. We'll also have reaction from the Gills manager after their much-needed win in the EFL Trophy last night wasn't enough to see them through to the knockout stages. But first, taking a look at our top story today, the Archbishop of Canterbury says the past few days have renewed his long-felt and profound sense of shame at the historic failures of the Church of England. Justin Welby has resigned over the institution's handling of abuse by the late barrister John Smythe. There are now questions over who will replace him. Dr. Chris Deasy is an honorary reader in theology at the University of Kent.
I think he's done a very honourable thing. I think that it would have been very hard for him to stay in his position. And we know that there is a lot of history here. We know that he's been Archbishop for over 10 years. And the person who was at the centre of the abuse allegations was somebody that the Archbishop knew back in the 1970s. And there's a sense maybe here, as some of his detractors would say, that maybe he was covering up. I think that in resigning as he did today, he is showing that the Church of England is taking these abuse allegations seriously.
It's quite unusual though, isn't it, for something like this to happen and for an Archbishop to quit like he has done. We saw thousands of people had signed a petition. Do you think he felt like he had no option?
I think that there was the public pressure because this was the lead news story yesterday afternoon. And you're absolutely right. I can't think of an occasion when we've had an Archbishop of Canterbury or any Archbishop really resigning in this kind of way. I mean, I suppose there have been bishops who've been forced into resigning, but when you have an Archbishop of Canterbury, then obviously as the head of the Anglican Communion in the world, then this is a very notable thing. I mean, when you consider that an Archbishop of Canterbury is appointed by a panel that's presided over by the Prime Minister, you think of the constitutional links. This isn't a random event, and it's not as though there's somebody, a deputy, who's going to take over tomorrow. This is a process that will take a matter of months. So normally an Archbishop would leave, they'd normally retire, and then there would be a process in place whereby their successor would be chosen. So the circumstances around this are unprecedented.
And of course, he's incredibly high profile. I mean, he's got a very powerful job. I mean, he's the man who put the crown on the king's head during the coronation. He's overseen royal weddings. I mean, what sort of impact does this have on the church, do you think, when someone who is so high profile stands down like this?
Well, when you consider that there's a film out at the moment called Conclave, now that's a film about Roman Catholicism and the election of a pope, but it's dealing with exactly these same issues. In other words, that the Church of England has been rocked by abuse allegations that are not only, to be fair to the Church of England, it's not exclusive to them by any means, but what it means is that there's no longer the opportunity for the church to effectively cast off or to tone down or to in any way sort of try and hush up what's happening. And I think that the church, as is the case in so many other walks of life, you certainly have it in politics, you can no longer countenance these sort of allegations. That heads have to roll, there are people who have to resign. But also, more importantly, there's a recognition that there are victims in these sorts of situations. And I think that it's an awareness that the church has to practice what it preaches. And I think that the feeling in many cases is that there has been, and I'm not speaking specifically about the Church of England here, but institutional cover-up. And I think there's a point now when that's not sustainable. And when you consider that these are not things that happened 5 or 10 months or even years ago, in some cases we're talking over many decades. And so the church has to be fully accountable and responsible for what has happened historically.
And how does the church recover from this, Chris? Is it going to be easy for them, or is it going to be some tough times ahead, do you think?
It's going to be very tough times ahead. I think that a lot of people, though, also will look at this and say, well, the church is being upfront, because it has to be. I mean, whether anybody says that they were forced into this position or whether they are genuinely saying, no, we need to change tack, I mean, that there will be detractors from that position. But I think the key thing is that the church here going forward will have to ensure that when it vets its candidates, it makes its appointments, when it appoints clergy, then no longer can the church possibly countenance having among its clergy people who are doing ministry work and also ministering to victims of abuse, people themselves who either were abusers or, as in this case, the feeling that the church is covering up, whether that happened or not. There's this suspicion that there has been a cover-up and that people have been allowed to get away with crimes that the members, senior members of the Church of England were aware of. So I think that going forward, it's going to have to rebuild. Short term, it actually presents a very bad picture for the church. It doesn't, it's this is a very dark day for the Church of England. But I think that victims of this will say, well, going forward, the church will have to do what it should have done a long time ago and be far more forward facing and far more victim friendly in the way that it undertakes its mission.
Kent Online News.
A man's been charged following reports of a sex attack in Gillingham Park. A woman is said to have been attacked near the Canterbury Street entrance last month. Police say they're looking at forensic evidence and CCTV. A 43-year-old has been remanded in custody ahead of a court appearance. A Gillingham woman who took advantage of a vulnerable girl and exchanged explicit messages has been jailed. A court was told how Abby Knight would question the victim about what she was doing when they weren't together. The 24-year-old from Windmill Road has been locked up for 3 years and will be barred from working with children and vulnerable adults. A court has heard how a hauling woman violently attacked her neighbours after they complained about her loud music. Maria White, who was drunk at the time, hit, scratched and punched the victims before other neighbours stepped in. The 55-year-old from the High Street has 42 previous convictions. She's been given a 12-month community order. A teenager has been charged after four people were attacked with a corrosive substance in Margate. The victims suffered reddening and irritation to their faces and chests after being sprayed in Mansion Street on Saturday morning. Ronnie Tudor, who's 19 and from St Luke's Avenue in Ramsgate, has appeared in court. It's emerged P&O spent £47 million sacking and replacing almost 800 workers 2 years ago. Recently released accounts reveal the sudden dismissal of experienced seafarers helped the ferry company cut their losses by over £125 million in 2022. The employees were replaced with cheaper, less experienced agency staff. A grieving mum has launched a petition to ban dogs from a cemetery. Cody Hopman, who's from Folkestone, says she's been left absolutely disgusted by walkers letting their pets run around while she's visiting her 16-year-old daughter's grave. Our reporter Louis has been following this story for the Kent Online podcast. He's with me now. Louis, can you give us some background on Cody and what her issue is with dogs in the cemetery?
Cody Hopman tragically lost her daughter, Alicia Marie Ponter, in a car crash last February. She's since been buried at Hawkins Cemetery in Folkestone in what Cody calls her forever bed. Now, every day, Cody visits her one and only daughter, but she feels that what should be a quiet space to feel close to her has become a dog walking site. And she's been absolutely disgusted by the lack of respect shown, even witnessing dogs weeing up headstones. She feels that there are so many other areas to walk dogs. Why choose Hawkins Cemetery?
And I understand she set up a petition.
Yes, so Cody has since set up a petition looking to ban dogs from Hawkins Cemetery. Already, the campaign has received more than 300 signatures, despite only being set up 4 days ago. Already, those that have given their support have commented on how awful it must be for the families who have loved ones buried there. One even agreed that it must be so awful as their quiet, peaceful spot to visit their loved one is spoiled by roaming pets.
And what action have the council taken?
Already at Hawkins Cemetery, Folkestone Hythe District Council have placed signs stating dogs must be on a lead at all times, but it's become clear this hasn't always been followed. Ashford Borough Council has taken this approach one step further for graveyards in their district, saying dogs must be on a lead but are only allowed if accompanied by someone visiting a grave. Canterbury City Council have certainly introduced the strongest measures, banning dogs from all cemeteries in the city as well as in Herne Bay and part of Whitstable's cemetery. They did this through a public space protection order. However, there were calls to review this after one grieving widow was handed a £100 fine after taking her border collie to her husband's graveside.
Thanks, Louis. You can have your say on whether or not dogs should be banned from cemeteries by taking part in our poll in the story at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
A worker has suffered a serious leg injury after a vending machine fell downstairs at a Kent power station. It happened at Dungeness B when the machine was being moved to the site in March. A Northamptonshire-based company carrying out the work have been served an improvement notice. Plans to knock down a Victorian farmhouse on Sheppey and replace it with six homes has been refused. Council bosses raised concerns about the impact it would have on the landscape of the area near the Calstead Corner roundabout. Permission has been granted to demolish and convert an agricultural building and two barns as part of a wider scheme. A weight restriction is being imposed on a bridge near Canterbury after a survey by engineers found weakened joints. The Grove Ferry Bridge at Up Street is used by hundreds of drivers every day. The 7.5-tonne limit will come into force next year before the structure is completely replaced in 2026. politics. Now, a Green councillor has accused the government of pandering to developers when it comes to house building in Kent. Mark Hood represents Tunbridge at KCC and says more social housing is needed to reduce the number of people in temporary accommodation. He's been speaking with Simon on the Kent Politics podcast.
House building is a huge issue in this county. Do you think we're building the right types of houses?
We're definitely not building the right types of housing. What we are doing is the government's pandering to developers. And when you look at the west of the county especially, you look at Sevenoaks, Tunbridge Wells, Tunbridge Morling, where you've got districts like Sevenoaks, they've got 93% of the available land is greenbelt. And you just cannot fit that many houses in. And if you're limited, then you need to look at where the greatest need is. Mm. And addressing local need first, I think, is the responsibility of any council. Mm-hmm. And that means looking at social housing. And a lot of councils are building social housing, and a lot of them are conservative councils, because they recognise that it's also an investment. If you have an independent housing company that you have an arm's length relationship with, that you can actually protect your investment by making sure it's not susceptible to right to buy, and that you can solve the problem you've got with a lot of temporary accommodation, which is going to cost Tunbridge Morling £665,000 this year alone, and then you can make sure that you've got money coming in to pay for your services going forward. So I think it's critically important that you get it right, and that the government allows local councils like Tunbridge and Morling to actually focus on that kind of social housing, and give us the money, provide the money for us to get on and do this kind of work.
If you missed that episode of the Kent Politics podcast, you can download it at the podcast page at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Some parents in Kent claim their children have missed out on vital education because of a delay in post-16 travel assistance arrangements. Applications to the County Council should take around 6 weeks to process, but some mums and dads are yet to hear back despite getting paperwork in before the May 31st deadline. The authority has apologised and said the delays are affecting a very small number of people. They're now trying to accelerate processing the requests. A Dartford care provider has been rated inadequate after inspectors found staff weren't respecting people's dignity and privacy in their own homes. Unite Highland Care has been placed in special measures, which means it'll be kept under close review. The company support people to live in their own homes in Kent, along with others in supported living accommodation. Bosses have been told they need to make significant improvements. Thames Water is understood to have agreed a deal with its creditors for a £3 billion lifeline. The struggling supplier, which covers parts of North Kent, says three quarters of its debt could be refinanced to tide the company over until next year. A court still need to approve the plan. Plans to build a permanent community diagnostic centre in Dartford have been given the green light. The new medical centre at Livingstone Community Hospital will replace the temporary one already on site. It'll offer a wide range of diagnostic tests in the hopes of bringing down NHS wait times. It's expected to open next year. The MP for Dartford has called on the government to extend the Elizabeth line into Kent. It currently terminates at Abbey Wood, but was originally planned to go through to Dartford and Ebbsfleet. Jim Dixon has told a debate in Westminster that investment in the line would drive growth.
A quick look at the map shows the discrepancy with services north of the river reaching all the way out to Shenfield, but south of the river only as far as Abbey Wood. I warmly welcome the new residents being attracted to live in Dartford, thanks to the amazing new development which is taking place, with many young families looking for comparably more affordable homes and often commuting into London. Despite not being a London constituency, we are, though, dependent upon transport links into the capital. These are crucial to the economic growth in Dartford and across the Thames estuary, which has the potential to be an engine of growth for the new Labour government. 5 years ago, in 2019, the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government provided funding for the C2E partnership, an informal group of interested local authorities to undertake a comprehensive study into options to improve transport connectivity between Abbey Wood and Ebbsfleet and Gravesend in order to support new housing and employment along that growth corridor. In 2021, this was refined to three options. One, an extension of the Elizabeth line to Northfleet and Ebbsfleet and Gravesend, sharing existing tracks with National Rail Services. A second option, extending the Elizabeth line to Dartford with the construction of new tracks. And a third option of National Rail Service frequency improvements and a new rapid bus transit service from Abbey Wood to Ebbsfleet. Now, I have to say, given the challenges with traffic that my constituency already experiences, I'm somewhat sceptical about the third option, and there are significant challenges to sharing track with the existing National Rail Services, making the first option difficult. Unfortunately, since this narrowing down of options in late 2021, we've seen little progress since the business case was submitted to the last government, the Conservative government. The idea was revived earlier this year by Local London, a collection of nine local authorities in North East and South East London who included it within research they commissioned on the region's long-term transportation needs. And I know the London Borough of Bexley and my honourable friend, the member for Bexley Heath and Crayford, are very keen to see this work progress as he has so ably and articulately set out. So I want to urge the Minister and his colleagues across government to look at how we can get on and finish the Elizabeth line as it was originally intended, growing the economy, boosting productivity and improving lives across our region. And that means its extension to Ebbsfleet, where its links with high speed and international services would create an ideal interchange. And that must be a key priority in considering the future of the Elizabeth line.
Kent Online News.
Contractors have now been appointed to clear 35,000 tonnes of illegally dumped waste in woodland in Ashford. It's been 6 months since the Environment Agency was ordered to clean up Hodes Wood after lorries were seen tipping piles of rubbish there in 2023. No timeline has been given for when the work will start, but it's expected to cost up to £15 million. We're told extra work is being carried out on a Kent theatre before it can reopen for shows. The roof of the Orchard in Dartford has been replaced after rack concrete was discovered. Now the fire safety needs to be upgraded following new rules introduced after the Grenfell Tower disaster. A mystery over why a town centre clock in Folkestone is running slow appears to have been solved. The ornate clock is more than 100 years old and can be seen above a shop on Cherrington High Street, but the people who rent the space where the mechanism is kept are no longer allowing access to the space. Kent author Samantha Harvey has won this year's Booker Prize. Her novel Orbital is about astronauts looking down on Earth. She'll get £50,000 as part of the award. And a mystery Kent woman is celebrating after winning £10,000 a month for a year. Mrs. W has decided to spend her lottery winnings on a new car, holiday and a boiler.
Kent Online Sports.
Football Now and Gillingham have failed to qualify for the knockout stages of the EFL Trophy despite beating League One Stevenage on penalties. The game finished 1-1 last night and the Gills' eventual victory wasn't enough to get through in the competition because of previous results. Here's manager Mark Bonner.
I really enjoyed the game, actually. Yeah, I thought it was probably lots of what we thought it would be. We had a period after we scored where we might have made a bit more of, and we started the second half really well. And we have the chance. Joe Bode whistles one past the post. Jack Nolan whistles one past the post. Somehow Connor's header hasn't gone in and whistled past the post. And then we sort of gift them a moment that Dan Kemp's not going to pass that one up when you give him it. So we had chances to go two up, actually, and get ourselves to that position in the game that might have seen us through. Being truthful, that wasn't probably the priority tonight. It was definitely the ambition, but the priority tonight, as you can see, was play. Some of the boys that didn't play haven't played, certainly at the front end of the pitch. Stick with a shape we've worked a little bit on in the last couple of games and give a few other players a chance to play in it. And they had a changed side as well, but made some really strong changes in the second half. So I actually enjoyed quite a bit of the game. I thought the difference between good bits and bad bits in the game was too big. And there was a bit of inconsistent streak through the game, but there's certainly some of the individuals in it have done themselves a good favour tonight. I thought there was two or three really good performances, which I'm really happy with. And off the back of a good result at the weekend, that's not the worst result really. It just feels like a little bit of momentum can just keep building, and a worthwhile game for everybody, really, I think.
They've got a break this weekend as their League Two match against Walsall has been postponed. And former Premiership rugby club Wasps have secured a site to build a new 28,000-seat stadium in Kent. They're looking to relocate from the Midlands after going into administration in 2022. Their new home will be in Swanley between Dartford and Sevenoaks. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Kate Faulkner, all one word, at the checkout, you get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.